You're fond of me lobster, ain't you?
Drunken in a Virginny fence.
I seen it. You're fond of me lobster.
I don't have to say nothing.
Danny!
In a world where zombies, ghosts, serial killers, and vampires all exist, it's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin, and they are all that stand between you and the films that could end the world. Welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast. Just want to thank all of our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's film review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network. So there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Medium dick then dip.
Medium dick then dip. Gotta hit them with the medium. That song goes hard as fuck. All right, guys, jumping to the film review. This week is my pick, and I'm scared to death that I'm going to be all alone. I'm actually pretty certain I'm going to be all alone and liking this movie. But if y'all do remember May 31st, I think that's when we were all together for Mike's wedding, 2022. We recorded an episode together, and we had a mailbag question. What's a movie you've been dying to pick, and you just haven't picked it yet? And I picked The Lighthouse. And it's pretty crazy timing because I think that was going to be my birthday bonus. Then I changed it. And it's weird timing because that movie was in the theaters last night. And I got to see it in theaters the night before we reviewed it. A24 dropped the screenplay book today if you want to buy that. Weird timing. But anywho, I saw the movie a couple years ago just watching it at home. I really enjoyed it. It's Robert Eggers. You know, we did his movie, The Witch, episode 170. Check it out on don'tgooutthere.com. I think we all had praise for The Witch just from the historical accuracy, the commitment to detail, the atmosphere, the incredible acting. I think Robert Eggers is one of the best out there just from a technical standpoint, getting things right standpoint. I think he's an incredible filmmaker. I think he's very interesting to listen to. I'm sure all of you have people maybe from in this genre or other hobbies or passions like you like wrestling or, I don't know, Brian, like Ghostbusters or something. I'm sure there's like that one person you enjoy just listening to their interviews. Like they're really interesting or they have unique, you know, point of views. And Robert Eggers just really entertaining to listen to just from his knowledge and how he approaches filmmaking. And I really like this movie. Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson act their asses off. It's incredible. We've said it in the past about, you know, Toni Collette, Florence Pugh, Mia Goth not getting their praises for their acting. Lupita Nyong'o not getting their praises from the Oscars. They got totally snubbed. These guys act their butts off. Can't give them enough praise. The movie's a little weird. Got some unique stuff. But this is all from, like, source material from, like, you got to put yourself in that, like, late 1890s mindset, like, these sailors, these lighthouse workers, like they believed in this mythology, like this, the creatures of the sea, you know, they would talk to sailors like who believed in that stuff. So it makes sense. I mean, even if you don't understand it, it's not like it's just a made up boo-boo, you know? So I enjoy the movie. I'm excited to discuss it. And I hope y'all don't get bored of hearing me because I do have a lot, mostly on the filmmaking aspect, because I fully acknowledge this was not the easiest movie to take notes on. Like, from an analysis standpoint, like Brian kind of mentioned, me and him were talking. It was easy for scene by scene, but like, what the hell are you supposed to say in between it though? Yeah. a little weird. Good acting. Looks cool. All right, next. I mean, but anyway. Brian, I'm excited to hear you hate on another A24 movie. Go ahead and let me hear your thoughts, brother.
Well, first of all, you know, you mentioned, Nico, you have to get yourself in the 1890s mindset. Should be easy for Brian. He was a teenager. So go ahead, bro.
Right, exactly, you motherfucking asshole.
Also, Nico, May 28th, ageism. Brother, May 28th. Shout out to Catherine. Love you. See? I remember. Look it up. Okay.
Ageism. Man, this fucking show. And listen, I've got a lot because I'm doing scene by scene, so I don't really get to give my thoughts and feelings that much on every scene by scene, which, by the way, I was saying before this, thank you so much for letting me do the scene by scene on this, because I would have been in trouble trying to do the fucking break them down like you guys are doing. But all right, so here we go. I got a lot. So I think my tally up to this point with A24 movies I've seen, if we did the math right the other day when we were talking about it on the show, is 3 and 4. Like likes to dislikes, not 3 of 4. I know Nico really wanted me to like this movie, but I'm sorry to say I'm going to be 3 and 5 after this review. I kind of feel like Nico on the Us review, because I truly wanted to like this. I promise I really tried to like this, because like I liked The Witch review. Don't go out there.com. I thought, okay, you know, maybe Eggers and me see eye to eye, but you know, we joke about the, you just don't get it thing. And we talked a little bit about this exact thing off air before we did this show. And I've been known to call some A24 fans, especially pretentious, but to an extent, I don't get it. Like, that's very true. Like, I don't get how you can watch a movie, and we've seen it here with Beau Is Afraid, for example. And I've heard it on, you know, and Dustin was talking about it on his A24 reviews, which, by the way, are on all of our social medias. Go check those out. But, and I'm curious to see if I do hear it here in this movie too, but I just don't get watching a movie, admittedly saying the words, I have no idea what I watched, and still scoring it high and saying, I like it. My mind doesn't work like that. And hey, I mean, it's okay. Different strokes, different folks. But like I jokingly said to Dustin before, I think we watch movies for different reasons. Like I am fine with weird, but, and I sound like a broken record. You know, I need a plot. I need some sort of ending. Like I'm fine with ambiguous endings, but a lot of these A24 movies I have an issue with take that to the extreme. You know, I hope that makes some sort of sense. Last thing I'll say, and I'll shut up and just do my scene by scene, but William Dafoe, like Green fucking Goblin. Like, I'm sorry, I was not familiar with your game, sir. Dafoe's acting was 10 out of 10 in this film, and like nothing against Pattinson. His was fine, his was good, but Dafoe stole this fucking movie acting-wise. I will say that.
All right, Brian, I believe I've actually said on the show, and I may have said in that episode that we did before my wedding, Nico, that I wasn't looking forward to this review. Well, I've watched this movie 3 times. First time, didn't like it, not going to lie, felt slow. Second time, third time, I was able to appreciate the acting. So like you both are right, in my opinion. Like, this movie has such strong acting performances that it makes me keep my eyes on it. Like, I can't take my eyes off this movie when I have it on. Like, is this a movie I need to rewatch ever again? No, because I don't necessarily like this movie, but I like parts of this movie. And you hit the nail on the head, Brian, and Dustin knows exactly what I'm talking about because he agrees with me in this respect. A wrestling match can have some of the best moves you've ever seen. You're like, oh, that was cool. Yeah, that was a good match. But if you're not giving me a reason to invest in that match, a story, a really good narrative reason for a professional wrestling match, I'm like, yeah, that was fine. That was good. But I don't care about these two wrestlers. Same thing mm-hmm. with this movie, in my opinion, where what the fuck is going on? You know, like, I guess I kind of understand the plot, but not really. So I'm left confused every time I see it. Look, nothing on the way it was shot. I love the choice to do it in black and white. I thought it added so much to the movie. Love the cinematography. Love the direction. The acting is top fucking notch from both guys. But the story to me gets lost. Like, I just, maybe I'm a fucking moron, which half the time I am. but I just, I want to like it more than I do, because to me, the acting and everything else is so good. It's just missing something. Like, I just needed a little more narrative to follow through on. That's all. But again, I'm glad we're reviewing it. Nico, I was wrong if I've ever said I wasn't looking forward to it, because I am. Because there is a lot of good to talk about.
Yeah, so like Brian mentioned, I've been on a journey to watch every A24 movie ever made, whether it's horror or not. And of the horror movies, I think when I made those videos that I posted, I'd watched 19, if my count's right. And I think of those 19, I didn't do an official count, how many I liked, how many I didn't like. But it was like 14 or 15 that I liked, or at least thought were really good movies. The Witch is a good example of that. No, I do not like The Witch. Fuck that movie. But man, it was damn good. I watched another one last night called Men. That's going to fall in the category of fuck that movie. That's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. But this movie is interesting to me because, like you said, the acting, top-notch. Top-notch. Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson killed it. I love the monochrome look. I've been singing the praises of Godzilla Minus One, Minus Color lately, and I'll do the same for this movie as far as the look. I love monochrome or black and white when it makes sense, like for a time period, and it's absolutely perfect. I get the metaphors with like Prometheus and, you know, the mythology, the story there. I get that. And there's other stuff like the psychoanalyst stuff that, you know, the Homo erotica and all that stuff. But there were chances taken with this movie that just left me dumbfounded. You know, I even said it in that review that we posted on TikTok, X, Instagram, or wherever else, that YouTube, mermaid vagina. Like, what the fuck did that add to the story? I don't know. And I've also picked up a theme in A24 movies. There's a lot of jacking off going on, man. A lot.
Right?
A lot.
See, I'm glad that you're seeing this a little bit here. So, I thought I was on a fucking crazy train here, like, with what the fuck is going on in these movies?
The Lighthouse, The Iron Claw has a jack off scene. The Killing of a Sacred Deer has a hand job story and a hand job. Moonlight has a J.O. On the beach.
Afraid has a hand job in there.
Bo's Afraid. Like, it's like it's in the contract when you sign up, like, yes, we will fund your movie. Does it have a hand job? No. You better get to working on it. We're not writing this check. It's like that's a requirement for A24 sometimes. It's just interesting to me. I don't know. It's a recurring theme. But aside from the HJs, like, this movie is just so confusing to me because I don't know, and it's intentional. Like, he doesn't want you to know what's real and what's false because you're descending into madness with these characters, and it's shot from Pattinson's character's perspective. Like, he's the one we're following, so it's like, yeah, we, just like him, we can't discern what's real from what's fake or, yeah, you know, a hallucination. But I don't know. I want some kind of finality, or I want some kind of conclusion that's going to leave me with at least a shrivel of understanding, and we don't get that. So, Brian, you mentioned how you don't understand how you can watch a movie, not know what the fuck's going on, and like it. That's kind of where I'm at with this, man. I don't necessarily like it, but it's such a well-made movie, and the acting performance is so good that it's still going to get a decently high score for me just because it checks so many boxes. Enjoyment and understanding are not checked, but there's so many other boxes in this movie that are checked that I can definitely appreciate it. And you mentioned Eggers. He's fucking insane. He is fucking insane. Him and Ari Aster. Those two need padded rooms and straitjackets because what the fuck's going on upstairs with those guys? But
speaking of Shrovel, have we forgotten that Bo is Afraid had a giant dick in the attic? Like, it had a giant dick.
He used shrivel as a segue there.
Well, yeah.
You're going to be a radio host, Brian. You're good at the segue shit.
Call him Paul Blart with that segue. Go ahead.
Dude, golly, really quick, that's one thing. And I don't have it in my open, but you touched on it, and you're so right. So I get mad, and I typically don't, because I like the openness that a lot mm-hmm. of movies, when they do this. But this idea that I don't know what I'm watching when I'm watching, is it real? Is it happening? Or is Pattinson, you know, losing his fucking mind and none of it's happening? Like, that gets frustrating by the end, where we don't have any settlement, any finality to that question. That does bug me as a viewer.
Absolutely. And I'll take it a step further. It's something that I enjoy about this movie and hate at the same time. Like the scene where Defoe sure. asks him, like, how long have we been on this rock? Where are we? Have we been here 2 days, 6 months? Like, I love it there, because that makes us question as a viewer, like, oh shit, what is going on actually? But in the end, tie it up, man. Tie it up.
Or even
that's all,
dude,
I
even
want. That's all I'm asking. That's it. That's all I'm asking.
Dude, even when he's like, you're in Canada somewhere. You know, you're not even really here right now. This is all in your head. I want to be like, well, fucking is it? I don't fucking know. Well,
and see, I have that. I have that in my closing thoughts, but I'll go ahead and say it here since you brought that up. It's like when he says that, and then the ending when he falls down the steps, which is fucking hilarious. By the way, God, I bet that hurt like a bitch. That stuntman did not get paid enough for that. But when he's getting pecked at by the seagulls and he's essentially dead there, like there's logs in the background. And so was this like just in his head? Was he really, did he die in the woods? And like, this is all just some kind of fucking hallucination as he's dying, this whole lighthouse scene. Who the fuck knows?
Death by peck is a tough way to go, by the way. That's a tough
death
one.
By peck. Dude, that's a shirt just with the tether don't shit.
Death by peck. Death by peck, pal.
All right. I don't want to hold us up any longer because I know we're all tired and we want to, you know, knock this episode out. But the last thing I want to say before Brian starts is, one thing I really appreciate about this show is the diversity of this genre. And like before we started this month, we did Kong Skull Island, which is what, 180 degree difference from this movie. And later down this year, I fully plan on picking Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which is one of the most campy, silly, stupid, awesome, fun movies ever. And it's still in the same genre as this movie. I really appreciate how diverse the vast range that this genre has. And I'm really looking forward to breaking this movie down in an analytical and serious, funny way, because this movie is serious and funny. So I'm excited to talk about it.
And even my pick next week is like a complete 180 from either of those two movies, from Kong Skull Island or this one. So, yeah.
Doing scene by scene right now, buddy. I'm halfway through.
Well, don't spoil it because I don't even remember what the movie is.
Me and Dustin may finally be back on the same page, pal. All right.
We're in this together. Hell yeah.
God damn it. I knew that was coming. All right. Fucking A24 Lighthouse. Here we go. It's the 1890s, and for some reason, we get a standard screen ratio for something that took place before they even had TVs. Okay. We see two men making their way from a ship up to a lighthouse, passing two other men on their way, signaling a shift change of sorts. We are following who we are led to believe is Ephraim Winslow, a Wiki, on a four-week stint at a lighthouse off the coast of New England under the supervision of a former sailor, Mr. Thomas Wake. We are given a bit of a tour of the lighthouse by Winslow before he eventually makes his way to his room, where we are treated to a fart from Wake as Winslow finds a small trinket of a wooden mermaid inside a hole from his bed. How he knew that was there, we're never told. Regardless, he pockets that shit, and after some coal shoveling, are treated to our first dinner, where 7 minutes in, we get our first dialogue between the two. Winslow appears to be standoffish, and Wake comes across a bit hardened and definitely demanding as the two feel their relationship out in an exchange that could have gone better from a man Winslow. Presumably, the next day and subsequent days, we see Winslow working his ass off while Wake stands almost in a trance, staring at the lighthouse lamp, stripping naked, something Winslow definitely clocks on his nightly walks on and off the beach, a walk on the beach that we are shown he sees a mermaid. But was that a dream? Was that a drunken stupor? We aren't sure, as we see a rocky training montage of Winslow working his ass off with the lighthouse duties, including seeing Wake's bare ass fucking his mattress. And we end with Winslow carrying the entire barrel of oil up all of the stairs only to be told again not to go to the lamp and handed a smaller container for next time and told to carry the barrel back down the stairs. Winslow clocks Wake using a skeleton key to open the hatch to the lamp, and Wake asks Winslow if he's a dullard. That's it for this group of scenes. Go ahead, Nico.
All right, starting off, I just want to thank my co-host for joining me tonight. I know this was an extremely difficult film to take notes on. I mean, hell, Eggers himself said this is basically the same couple of scenes over and over, so I appreciate you guys. I really appreciate Robert Eggers' commitment to creating atmosphere. He said in interviews that when approaching a new film, he creates the atmosphere in his mind before even writing the story. The film looks unique, obviously. It's black and white with a distinct boxy picture. How did he do it? Here you go. It was shot on 35mm black and white XX 522 film, all while augmenting the Panavision Millennium XL2 camera with vintage Baltar lenses from as early as 1918 to as late as 1938. They used some lenses as old as 1905. This makes the aspect ratio approximately 1 to 19.1, which is practically square. To enhance the image and make it resemble early photography, a custom cyan filter made by Schneider Filters emulated the look and feel of orthochromatic film from the late 19th century. This filter blocks all the red wavelengths from hitting the film so that the red appears black. Considering most pores and skin tones have red in them, the orthochromatic emulation allows the audience to see just about every imperfection and pore on the actors' faces. All right, now back to my personal thoughts. This foghorn would drive me fucking nuts. The on-call phone at my job for the longest had this style ringtone, and I have residual PTSD from hearing it go off at 2:30 a.m., so I don't know how Winslow didn't lose it within the first hour. Huge props to costume designer Linda Muir, I think is how you say her name. I think the costumes throughout the film look incredible. All the costumes were handmade and inspired by books of lighthouse keepers and sailors of the times. The film was shot in Cape Foreshoe in Nova Scotia. Every building seen in the film was built by the crew. They made their own 70-foot lighthouse that could cast a light that could be seen up to 16 miles away. One of the few good things of being a shorter guy is never bumping my head. Insert happy face covering crying face meme. And I love we have two farts within the first 5 minutes of the movie. We have more farts than dialogue. Let's go. I always get a little jump scare from the loud machinery transition every time I watch the film. Fun fact, according to Willem Dafoe, the cutlery used in the film was from an actual lighthouse. I like that attention to detail. The kerosene lights used were wired with extremely bright halogen bulbs so the light would display on film. An actual flame wouldn't show well. The light was so bright set workers were wearing sunglasses and Dafoe Pattinson almost couldn't even see each other. Wake's accent and line delivery is phenomenal. He is so good portraying that old salty cuss who doesn't want to deal with the younger lads. Winslow is hard up, night one and already dreaming about the mermaid from the figurine he found. Goodness gracious, brother. Winslow peeping Tom catches Wake dry humping the mattress. I bet he doesn't stick his fingers in any more mattress holes. This seagull blocking the door reminds me of being at work and the most minor inconvenience just ruining your day. I got a little chuckle from him getting ornery with that seagull. This would infuriate me if my boss waits till after I drag this heavy-ass drum up these winding stairs, then shows me the easier way. I'm snapping on him. Dragging that drum back down the stairs is going to be an even bigger hassle. Goodness gracious, wait. That's all I got. Mike, you want to go ahead and go?
Sure, and I also have this first set's the most I have. Like, you know, it gets a little bit less as it goes because I get a little more confused as it goes. But that's okay. I'll go ahead and start. Sometimes you can just tell when a movie's about to be A24, like just off the cold open and the credits, like it just feels ominous, like something you're not expecting what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to, like, it just has that feeling to it, even in the cold opening credits. And I think that this movie has that. So I'm like, I know what I'm about to lock in for. I mentioned in my open, but I love the decision to use black and white. It makes it feel colder, darker, more intense. I do like that choice. It's not always my favorite way to view a film, but I think it works for this particular movie. Actually, Brian, you mentioned 7 minutes. It's 7 minutes and 42 seconds before we get a piece of dialogue. I made sure to timestamp that one. No dialogue until 7 minutes and 42 seconds. And as much as I love William Dafoe and Robert Pattinson in this film, how come William Dafoe decided to sound like Seamus from Family Guy? This fucking movie, like, that's literally the voice. Like, I can't unhear it now, and I couldn't unhear it throughout the whole film this time. Like, I'm like, that's where I know that voice from. I will say choosing to do it in black and white makes the food look less appetizing, looked so gross on the plate. Like, it's something I noticed every time they ate. Just made it really disgusting. And I know Brian probably appreciated these, but some of the shots of the lighthouse on the water I think are really beautiful. And I wish they just kind of stuck on them longer. I'm sure Brian, that's probably his favorite part of the movie. I'm not going to lie. This job fucking sucks, okay? Like, as someone who's had a manual labor job for a long time until he recently switched, I know the feeling. But this looks like I would honestly rather be in prison than have this job, I think. Like this looks like a fucking terrible place of employment. Noise-canceling headphones, even though I know they weren't invented because 1890s would be an automatic requirement. Man, that's too fucking noisy for me. I'd go deaf in a heartbeat. My hearing's already bad from mowing grass for about 12 years. And again, we get these shots of Defoe looking directly into the light, but I don't know if it's ever really explained. Like, I know it kind of wraps up at the end, but it gets a little frustrating because I'm like, well, what does that mean? Like, it doesn't ends up not meaning a whole lot. Like, they're good visuals, but, like, I don't quite understand why him doing that matters. So, I don't know, maybe someone will listen to this and give us all the answers that we're looking for. I will say the shots of the water, because they're in black and white, look like the kind of water that Andy Dufresne crawled through to get to his freedom. So, again, sometimes the black and white makes things like this a little bit grosser to me. Hey, there's a mermaid here. And we haven't watched a movie with a mermaid in a long time, but I've seen the 13th year, a Disney Channel original film. And,
yeah.
And I know how that movie ends, so I can only imagine how this movie's going to end, pal. Hey, could you imagine if one of these had swam off and been a mermaid like the 13th year? That would have been hilarious. That would have been awesome. Also, that's the shittiest ladder I've ever seen that he's walking up again. Terrible working conditions already, for sure. Look, these seagulls in the movie... Birds, seagulls, whatever the fuck. I'm calling them seagulls. They're annoying as hell. This seagull acts like my dog when she won't get out of the way. Like, just standing in the fucking way. You know, the seagulls are kind of a character, which I did enjoy. About 18 minutes in, I'm still not sure what the fuck is going on. All I know is that Robert Pattinson's character needs to be a fucking man, bring the drum up the stairs, take the drum back downstairs. Don't be a bitch. That's all I got.
So I love the look of the movie right off the bat. Like I said, monochrome can be very effective in establishing a tone, and it's perfect given the setting and time for the movie. Brian, even though you shit on the aspect, TV wasn't invented yet. Piss off, pal. I love the look. I love him going back as far as he could. You know, that's fine. It's also very effective how quiet the open is. No dialogue, no score, just the sounds of their surroundings for a while. That foghorn is enough to make anyone lose sanity. So is your coworker ripping ass in such close proximity? Come on, bro. Like, have some fucking courtesy. Willem Dafoe sounded like Eugene Krabs was unexpected and kind of funny, but he always does a great job. So it's funny. You said Seamus from Family Guy. I went Eugene Krabs, but same.
I said same, really, for sure.
Pattinson with an ultra disrespectful move, pouring the hooch down the drain. Bold to do that to the Green Goblin, but then again, he is Batman and Edward Cullen, so I guess he can handle himself. When we do have a score, it's very ominous. Excellent choice in music for the film, like throughout, because if you didn't have this dark and heavy of a score, it would be funnier than it is already. And so, like, it's a perfect balance to set the tone. I'm not sure why Pattinson had such a standoff with the seagull when he was pushing the wheelbarrow. It's a little bird. Keep going. If it doesn't move, boot that bastard through the uprights. He acted like he's afraid of it. Be a man. Another dick move from Wake to just now give him the oil can after he dragged the drum up the stairs. Like, I would have pushed that old bastard down the stairs probably. It's an okay open. Not much happened, but I'm intrigued because of the cast and how well made the movie seems so far.
So we open with another toast at another dinner where Wake encourages Winslow that dinner is a time for gab and chatter. We find out that Wake's last second went mad and died. Wake also warns him against killing a seagull being bad luck, something we found out is apparently super important to the Green Goblin, a reference Mike and Nico will definitely not get. This is immediately followed by a scene showing Winslow flogging his own little one-eyed Wiki while emerging to yet another shot of Wake standing butt-ass naked in front of the lamp.
Crazy.
Hold on.
Yet
Hold
again.
On. Hold on.
What?
Flogging his one-eyed Wiki?
his own little one.
You're calling me lobster. Oh, sorry.
That was fucking, that was Shakespearean. Go ahead.
But, I even wrote in this, like, why are we getting that? But sorry, I'm doing scene by scene. That's
man,
not my
ass
job.
Is funny. Get over it.
That's not my job. The next day, Winslow has had enough of Wake's bullshit and pushes back some. To no prevail, however, as Wake verbally bitch slaps him back down to earth and dares him to contradict him again. We see more work and hard labor from Winslow as the days and hours pass until we come to another evening of gab, where Winslow reveals that he is a former timberman from Maine who was stationed in Canada and is now seeking a new trade, saying he's just had enough of trees. He must have seen too many Kubrick movies. More chores are shown, and yet another night of Winslow not being able to sleep as he finds his way back up to the light, only to see Wake beating his little lighthouse and jizzing all over the floor, dripping in front of Winslow. I just wanted you to get the visual because we had to fucking see it. Winslow either sees or hallucinates a giant squid leg, and we jump to the next morning where sludge is all that is presented when trying to get some drinking water. Go ahead. Another glorious citizen.
All right. The interactions between Winslow and Wake are definitely what I like most of the movie. The banter is so fun, and I can't compliment Robert Eggers enough for writing another script in this kind of dialect. Speaking of dialect, I was extremely impressed by Eggers writing the New England dialogue in The Witch, which was episode 170 and available on don'tgooutthere.com in my Brian voice. And I'm equally, if not more, impressed by the writing of this 1890s Northeastern sailor dialogue. Robert and Max Eggers had many inspirations for this dialogue. Specifically, Robert praises a lady by the name of Sarah Orne Jewett, a Maine-based poet and novelist who interviewed sailors, lighthouse keepers, and farmers of the area, and she wrote those stories in their dialect. After several rewatches, going forward, I'm going to call everyone younger than me lad. So, Mike, you're going to be lad from now on because everyone else is older than me. Bad luck to kill a seabird, and the out-of-nowhere smack is iconic. That shit catches me off guard every time. I think Wake needed a drop of coffee before all this to calm him down. My man Winslow confirms here that he is extremely hard up, beating it to a mermaid figurine. That's the epitome of down horrendous. This is one of, if not my favorite scene of the movie, the swab dog. I don't know how Robert Pattinson didn't bust out laughing with the sucking all the rust off each nail and make it sparkle like a sperm whale's pecker. That's also my favorite costume worn in the movie. Wake looks like a lighthouse keeper from the 1890s. This is ass backwards. No way Wake should be holding Winslow up in the pulley system. I gotta love them old timers who think they still got it. Winslow, bad luck to mess with seagulls. Tread carefully swatting at it. Winslow told Wake to put some respect on my name. Shout out to Birdman. I get tired of being called lad too, and if I only got 2 more weeks, you better call me by my name. More great line delivery from Defoe. Why does a timberman want to be a wiki? I freaking love that line. And like Brian mentioned, Defoe definitely does carry at least the first half, the 45 minutes of the movie, because Pattinson's more like just reacting like to all this insanity. I appreciate Winslow just wanting to be a man who earns a living and settle down until we actually learn that he has a little bit of a troubled past. Fun fact, Willem Dafoe learned how to knit for this movie. He said his grandfather was a champion knitter, so it took him to a special place learning that skill. And this is why you stay in bed, Winslow, and mind your business. Almost catching another man's baby batter on your head because you got curious. I end my thoughts asking, was that a dream perhaps, or is he seeing things slipping into madness already?
Oh, that's weird because we never fucking get an answer to that.
Scene is crazy.
Okay. So, man, this motherfucker wants to toast way too often. No more toast. Been a long fucking day. Leave me the fuck alone. I just want to eat my goddamn dinner, man. Like, fuck this mother. Like, I love Defoe, and I think the dialogue is great, which I'll get into, but man, at this point in the movie, I'm not on his side because he's just being a fucking bother. Like, leave me the fuck alone, old man. Anyway, I will say these dinner conversations, really well shot, just a really interesting viewing experience. The chemistry on screen between the two actors, I think, really shines through in those scenes. Again, not sure what the fuck is going on, but I do, I still find it interesting because of the two actors' delivery. Finally, something happens, though. Like, they get into an actual argument instead of just, like, this nonchalant banter. And the crazy looks from Defoe and the dialogue, which is fucking hilarious, by the way. Because, you know, Nico, you did a better job than I did repeating it. I didn't take the time to write it down. But it was fucking awesome. And the looks that Defoe gives, I think, are great. Look, man, you know, jacking it to a mermaid is tough. Like, that's not what you do, man. That's a hard day at the office.
It's 1890. They didn't have the hub back then. Come on, cut them some slack. They had to rely on their imaginations.
I mean, you could just use your imagination. Like, what are you going to use, a mermaid figurine? That's a little tough. As someone who's had to push a wheelbarrow of rocks up a hill, again, this job's the worst piece of shit of all time. Fuck this job. That part sucks. It gave me bad flashbacks, man. PTSD of some kind. Again, love the dialogue from Defoe. Like you said, Nico, before we find out, you know what Winslow really is, I feel for him here. I do, because he just wants to work. He doesn't want to be fucked with, and yet here he is being fucked with. Come to find out, it's not so. You know, he's not so much of an angel. Look, man, I will no. Let me use another way to paint this lighthouse. It doesn't involve an old ass man pulling me up with a rope pulley. No fucking thank you. And I also don't want someone in control of my bucket but me. So I don't know how they painted this old shit back in the day, but this seems like a very flawed system. To do it, the old man, young man dynamic really starts to shine here, in my opinion. Just very compelling. More talking, you know, you have to go watch the movie for yourself, but I do think they finally start to get some character growth, some character development, especially Winslow here. Last two things. I do think the visuals of the black, you know, the monochrome black and white add to the shadows, I think really hit, like, they hit the nail. They're really, really well done. And also, that sludge looked like what I left in the toilet earlier for my pre-workout this morning. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, Jesus. When he says, the only medicine is drink, put that on my tombstone. That's a fucking bar. That was hard. I love that.
You were drink last weekend.
Yeah. So, Mike, when you said no one needs to toast that much, I couldn't help but think of when you came to Knoxville and I took you to Roosters. It was like every 7 minutes we were doing shots.
Cheers.
Wake mentions merfolk at dinner, and we saw a mermaid earlier. But I chalk that up to just, you know, being a dream or a hallucination or something. But apparently that's the direction we're going in this movie, I see. Okay. I'll tell you one thing, though. This motherfucker smacks me in the face like that after already being a dick, and he's going to die. Movie over. I'm sending that old fucker to meet Jesus. Then we get the obligatory A24 jack-off scene. Why? Like, did it add anything to the movie? No. I don't know what the job market was like in the 1890s, but I'd be finding out real quick after he yelled at me like that for not mopping to his satisfaction. Fuck this old man. Starts to get weird here when he gets up and we hear him moaning, and Ephraim sees a tentacle overhead and a big goop of ocean creature smegma trickles down. Initial thought, is Wake related to the deep from The Boys? Or is he fucking an octopus up there? Like, what? And Brian, I know you got that because we love The Boys, but like, that was never explained either. And he hasn't gone crazy at this point in the movie. And so, like, I'm writing these notes as I'm watching the movie for the first time, and that was never fleshed out. What the fuck is going on here? This is a slower set of scenes to me, but I do have some questions now. And so, like, I went from interested in the direction of the movie to now I'm just flat out intrigued. Go ahead, Nico.
No, this has nothing to do with the movie. I just got to call Brian out. I know what the Green Goblin is, by God. I saw all three of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, and I loved them. I saw the first one in theaters. That Green Goblin jump scare is one of the scariest ones in film history.
I have also seen those Spider-Man films. Two against my will, though. Two were not my doing.
Boomsaw is going to get you.
Boomsaw! Yeah! Much is given, much is required.
So Winslow emerges from the house only to find a dead seagull in the cistern, ruining the drinking water. He is attacked by the same one-eyed gull that had been pestering him and brutally beats the ever-living fuck out of it. A scene my 4-year-old daughter had decided she wanted to come in the room for, to which I just had to tell her that it was all fake and pretend because, you know, at this point in her life, she doesn't understand the A24 movies, just simply don't have normal reasoning. Immediately, the wind drastically changes directions, and Wake warns that a storm is coming, while again telling Winslow that he doesn't know nothing about nothing, and he needs to be scared and board up the windows. The two spend the night getting drunk as shit, celebrating that this is their last night on the rock. And I'd like to just take this opportunity to commend the two on actually drinking, or at least appearing to actually drink the liquids in their cups. It's an issue I've had in the past. The following morning, and clearly hungover, while emptying the chamber pots full of piss and shit that blow right back in his face, Winslow completes his chores in a torrential downpour. While doing so, Winslow appears to find the body of a beached, topless mermaid, and with the haste, he quickly caresses her nipples before finding gills and it awakening with screeches and howls. I don't know, is it it? Is it she? I'm not real sure. I went with it.
The storm prevents. We find out later. Well, very clearly, a she later.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true. If that's the same one, if that's the same one, it might not even be the same. We don't know. The storm prevents the tender from collecting them, and during chores, Wake informs Winslow that the storm has spoiled their rations. Winslow is not worried because he thinks the tender is only a day late, but Wake states that they have been stranded for weeks, the start of the blurring of reality. The pair unearth a crate at the lighthouse base that we assume is reserve rations, but turns out to just be full of alcohol. The two continue to get drunk every night and alternate between fighting and compassion towards each other. During one of their arguments, Wake gives one of the best speeches committed to film, and Winslow ends the set of scenes surrendering to liking Wake's cooking.
Brian, I'm so sorry I put you through this. My man sounded like he had a fucking experience watching this.
No,
and that's good. You need to have experiences watching a movie.
I want to propose something. Anytime we do an A24 movie from now on, Brian does scene by scene because he's cracking my ass off with some of the shit.
Deal.
Dude, bro is straight up not having a good time. All right. And like Brian mentioned, Winslow absolutely loses his marbles. Not only killing a seabird, but killing the fuck out of the seabird. Man took his whole day out on it. I love that the film insinuates the wind changes because bad luck to kill a seabird. Those old-timey folk tales are so interesting. Winslow looking mighty guilty, though, after killing the seabird and being interrogated by Wake. Drinking with Wake is like taking shots with Dustin Franklin, shot after shot after shot. Goodness gracious. I felt the pain right there. Seeing the two men sign... Seeing the two men singing and telling stories reminds me of Jaws when the three men were hanging out vibing on the boat. I think it's a great scene. I love when they both break out into laughter after the argument. Dudes being dudes, we love to see it. I know Winslow feels like absolute shit after passing out on a wood floor. I can't imagine the back and joint pains I feel at my old age of 33. And what in the hell is in those pots? Absolutely disgusting. This would have driven me into madness, dumping that stuff over the cliff. Then the wind blows it back all over me. Yeah, I'd lose it. My co-hosts call me Admiral Areola, so I give the mermaid a solid 9.5 out of 10. Damn near perfect.
Oh, my God.
Brother, you didn't have to put that live on the air.
Leave it in. This is...
Admiral Areola.
Right, that's up to you.
Admiral Areola.
Y'all called me. All right, let's keep going. This is where the movie starts to insinuate that Winslow has slipped into madness. It's been weeks since they missed a tender. He's been asking Winslow for weeks to ration. I appreciate this more than The Shining, telling you every 5 minutes how much time has passed by. I think we touched on that, like, it goes a week later, next Tuesday, 5 minutes later. I like the fact that it's kind of ambiguous. This conversation seems like a real drunken 1890s conversation. How the fuck are you going to eat grass with no teeth? I haven't heard this many what's since Stone Cold promos in the late 90s and early 2000s. It's this scene where Robert Pattinson really gets to show his acting chops. He's been good, but mostly reactionary. This whole scene of dialogue is so good, funny, and memorable. He wants to fuck a steak. Shut up, you old bitch, while tossing the pillow at Wake. You're fond of me, lobster. All right, I like your cooking. Defoe's eyes and face look absolutely horrific when he delivers these lines. According to Robert Eggers, this was done in one shot, and Defoe didn't blink one time in over 2 minutes. This is my favorite set of scenes so far, and possibly the whole movie.
All right, so the first thing I noticed in this scene, it's raining, and Defoe's hat makes him look like the Gorton's fish guy. It's So that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, this motherfucker's selling frozen fish sticks, man. What the fuck? Anyway.
You like fish sticks?
Just get the joke, man. Just get it. Anyway. Look, I would eat some alcohol, too, if I had this job. Like, this is already – not only am I losing my fucking marbles, but I got to deal with this old codger, and I got to work the shittiest fucking job ever. Yeah, man, I would actually want Dustin Franklin to be there so I could get as hammered as possible. It's the only way to deal with this shit, pal. Not saying you're an alcoholic. You just know how to have a good time, buddy. That's all. Yeah. look, I will say hearing some of this older guy's stories would be the best part of the job. Like, it'd be fun to kind of listen to him tell tales of the sea or, you know, whatever the fuck. Like, I think it'd be fun. Pushing rocks through rain. Don't miss it, man. Just don't miss it. I used to do it. Have to do it. Nope. Fucking sucks. Terrible way to make a living. If you're listening to us while you do that, I just know you're appreciated by someone. look, I know that, again, I'm sorry. I know there's deeper things going on in the film, but I just can't keep going back. I can't help but go back to how shitty the job is. Like, it just really bugs me how fucking, like Dustin said, I'm looking on Indeed.com or something, man. We got to figure out a way out of this position. The bad weather really does add something to the film, makes it more ominous, makes it scary. Like you mentioned, he killed the fuck out of that bird earlier. And so now the things have kind of flipped a little bit. You know, it's bad luck. Yes, bad luck. This is where he kind of starts to lose his fucking mind. And, you know, these scenes are starting to get so dark because of the monochrome. You can barely see the two actors for a little bit there when they're outside. And it's not the I watched the legit version, I swear. So the lighting was fine, okay? But you could barely see him. And I thought, again, this adds a little something. The weather almost acts like a character here, and I thought that was nice. Again, this is also the part of the film, and maybe I'm alone in this, where I start to notice the horn in the background a lot more. It's more prominent. It's starting to get louder. And it's annoying the piss out of me, to be honest, because when dialogue's being given and there's a giant horn in the back, I'm like, what the fuck did he just say? And like, I feel like they kind of ramp that up a little bit here. All these whats, which Nico mentioned, make me think I'm at a fucking WWE show, because, Nico, you don't know this, but all these years later, they still fucking chant what at what? Every fucking wrestler trying to cut a decent-ass promo.
What?
What? What? Anyway. Hey, this man said he'd fuck a steak. Brian, you gave us a look for one, the mermaid. This man wanted to fuck a steak. I mean, are we really that bad? Are we really that bad? Anyway.
Yeah, we got called everything but a man of God for saying that the green M&M was, you know, looking at us all scandalous like. Yeah, and
come on, man. She knew what this was the minute she changed some shoes, bro. Anyway, you're fond of me, lobster, is a line I'm going to try to use next to my flirt with my wife. Okay? You're fond of me, lobster. I know you are. It'll work. Trust me. It'll work. Last thing, the acting from Defoe and Pattinson is fucking incredible here. You mentioned the one take. I did see that. Fucking awesome. Just really, really good. Like I said, I still don't know what the point of this movie is, but watching these two in that scene drunk, and I don't know this, but man, they may have actually been drunk. Well, you know, while they shot this, because that's how much I believed in the characters here. And they're back and forth. You know, how do you eat, you know, grass without teeth? I don't know. That seems pretty fucking easy to me. I don't know. Just me personally. But I thought that the last part of this set of scenes, I think, is phenomenal. It's so well acted that it's almost scary. It really starts to hit home at the madness that's about to take over these two. Sorry, that was long.
Pause.
Hey, pause.
First off, hell yeah, bro. He fucked that bird up, OMG. Like, holy shit. And I don't blame him. Bird was asking for it. But immediately after, we get the creepy score and the weather vane starts going crazy. So it's like, ah, shit. Maybe Wake was right and then it is bad luck. Wake as a boss is just like my boss. You say no thanks to alcohol. The next thing you know, you're 12 shots deep of Don Julio 70 at the Marriott Bar in downtown Chicago. Been there. It's rough.
Oddly specific.
Yeah, I was drink. The next day was hell for Ephraim. Man is hungover, has to do manual labor, and then sees a fucking mermaid. I know his brain was fried. Like, I probably would have taken a walk off the cliff there. We hear that it's been weeks since they missed their relief, and that's an eye-opener. Like, he's off his rocker, and a sense of panic starts to set in, not just for him, but for us as a viewer, too, because It's like, oh shit, what's really going on? And then when Wake tells a completely different story about his leg, things are getting fucky here. Things are getting fucky. When he says, if I had a steak, I'd fuck it. That's an insane statement. But I had an Australian Wagyu filet last week in Chicago. I don't condone that behavior, but I understand. That was the best steak I've ever had. So I understand. This is a whirlwind set of scenes, honestly, like all over the place. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
I just want Brian to quit kink shaming everybody. That's all. That's all I'm asking.
It's 2024.
I blame myself.
Cinema. That's what it is. Fucking cinema. Let's go.
We open this next set of scenes with Winslow sitting on the stairs, hypnotized by the light. After unsuccessfully trying to pick the lock, Winslow tries to unsuccessfully steal the lantern room keys from a sleeping Wake, contemplating murdering him. But Thomas wakes up. Hey, that was a little bit of a pun. With his first words being, that's a queer way to wear your shoes. Okay. Followed by another fart and ordering Winslow to tend to his chores. Winslow tells him he's only tolerable when he's drunk and tends to his duties, drinking nonstop. And we get a more chaotic montage of chores and mermaid masturbating / fucking before it all comes to a head, pun intended, as he breaks the wooden mermaid trinket and finds the head of the one-eyed previous Wiki in a lobster trap. Not to be confused with my previous usage of the word one-eyed Wiki earlier, referring to a penis. While in one of their drunken stupors, after almost kissing and then beating the hell out of each other, Winslow confesses to Wake that his real name is Thomas Howard and that he assumed the identity of Ephraim Winslow, his cruel foreman in Canada, and told the story about how he deliberately allowed him to be killed. Howard then has another blurred episode between reality and visions with Wake accusing Howard of spilling the beans and Willem Dafoe man ass as he runs to the dory to try to leave the island. Wake appears and destroys the boat with an axe. Howard runs back to the lodge, and after another encounter, Wake claims it was Howard who chased him and hacked up the dory, and that it was Howard who was driven mad by his confession. Wake asks him to hand him the dinner knife and is told it's a figment of his imagination and that Tommy is probably still in Canada wading through the snow. And that's the end of that set of scenes, or is it? Because who the hell knows anymore? This movie pulled a Michael Keaton and said, you want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts.
All right. It's great facial acting by Pattinson looking up at the lamp. He looks like he's completely lost it. Man is risking it for the biscuit to see that light in person. I wonder what the message is. Wanting what you can't have? Is it just the sheer mystery? Why is Wake saying queer way to wear your shoes so funny? And then he farts on Winslow. I'm not joking. I'm crying laughing when he farts on him. Winslow is going to town beating it to this mermaid. Man makes a hell of an orgasm shriek. Good for him. I've never busted a nut that felt that good. Mermaid vagina was modeled after shark labia. Fun fact if you wanted to know. And this may come across as weird or abstract, but this is all pulled from mythology and other folk tales of the time.
Dude, Nico is going fucking crazy. He's going ham with this.
Bro, he's putting up Wilt Chamberlain numbers. Happening? What the fuck is going on?
What is happening right now?
This is like LeBron in Game 6 versus Boston right now. Why does this upbeat dance scene go so hard? Why don't the homies do this anymore while drinking? Slow dancing with the homies is not it, though. Respectfully, no. Of course. These guys are off the deep end into madness. These punches between the two gentlemen look real and painful. These shots through the lighthouse look so good. Can't compliment cinematographer Jaron Blasky enough for how good the film looks. This scene with nude Defoe beaming light into Winslow's eyes may have come across as bizarre, but it's a tribute to a painting by German artist Sascha Schneider called Hypnos, or Hypnosis, from 1904. Wake destroying the boat with the axe makes me think of he made Winslow miss the relief on purpose. Not sure what's funnier to me, Winslow's dialogue or Wake's blank stare at him. We get great line delivery by Defoe. How long have we been on this rock? 5 weeks? 2 days? Am I a figment of your imagination? We're out of drink. Scary thought for these two guys. Great movie, ready for the ending.
God damn, I was not expecting a shark lady appearance. Jesus Christ. Okay, I'll try my best. I can't fucking follow this man tonight. You put me in a bad position. I feel like I'm going out second on the WrestleMania card. This fucking sucks, man. Okay. Again, this fucking horde is getting more constant to me. Like, I don't know if it's just me or I'm hearing it louder and louder. Maybe I'm diving into madness myself while watching this fucking thing, because that's what it feels like. Okay, so I'm going to let y'all in on a little secret. We've mentioned the farting previously in the film, but I got to be honest. I didn't hear it until this set of scenes. So when he fucking actually farted on this man, I cried laughing so hard. Like, I honestly missed the farts in the other scenes. I don't know. I got no good reason. I just missed them. And then this, I was like, this motherfucker just farted. Did you hear that? Oh, good. Anyway, it kind of made it look like Pattinson was about to kill this man. And again, we don't know what's real, what's not real, because Defoe's character was asleep. And by the way, I know it's 1890, but we don't have to have assless pajamas. Just no reason to have a big button flap in the back that has a slit in the middle. Like, I know that'd probably be convenient, but we don't need that.
Brother, you could have used some of those on my doorstep.
Hey, we're not talking about the past, pal. We're living in the now. Yes, that would have been much more convenient to shit off the side of your porch. Anyway, I do love that we've absolutely turned the volume up on Pattinson's, that there it is, descent into madness. We've used that on this show before a time or two. But the volume has been ratcheted way up, and he's become completely unhinged, just acting like a total crazy man. Listen, this is the second time this happens. Brother, it's raining on you. All you have is a statue of a mermaid and your imagination of a mermaid, and you're whacking it again. Like, this is, come on, man. We got to get it together. Get it fucking together. This is unnecessary behavior. Wood, I understand. However, come on, man. You mentioned I could have gone my whole life without seeing mermaid vagina, man. Like, this is just not something I ever really needed to know about. But it's not going to think of other mermaids I've seen. And is that really what every mermaid looks like? Just, fuck. Anyway. Hey, man. All I got to say to him is, see God. In the words of my co-host, tell me every single day.
See God.
This is my fault. Seek God. You need to seek God. Look, these two singing and dancing together, that's a fucking riot, man. Me and Brother Vinny, who listens to the show, shout out to Brother Vinny, we sing and dance drunk together all the time, pal. That is the Vinny and Mikey show, you know, summed up right there. That's good shit. However, I don't know about the slow dance. You know, you could probably leave that in the cutting room for, but it's fine. They almost kissed, too. I was not expecting that. Was a little was something. I mean, look, no judgment, but just, I don't know. It wasn't the direction I was expecting the story to take. Kind of caught me off guard. Pattinson talking to himself here is great. You know, we're learning that Winslow also isn't who he says he is. His name is Thomas. He stole this identity. Like, we're really getting more backstory. And then we get this chase scene that I think is fucking intense. The rain, the music, which, you know, Destin mentioned, they don't use it a lot, but when they use it, it's very effective, very loud and ominous. I really like the way they use it. It's a great fucking scene. And, you know, this is where the line gets mentioned about it. Maybe it's all in his head and he's in a fucking forest in Kennedy, as our pirate master calls it here. But I could see A24 doing some shit like that. Like, it was all in his head. Oh, God damn it. Then why did we watch it? But we don't ever actually find that out either. At least we would have known that everything we watched was total bullshit.
And I would be okay with that. I would be all right with that.
Me too.
Woke up at the end and it was a dream or what the fuck ever. But Jesus Christ.
Anyway, this set of scenes is fucking insane, man. This is off the rails.
All right. So it's clear at this point that Pattinson is completely insane. Like, and when we get to another meat beat scene, complete with mermaid vagina and then mermaid sex, it's like, all right, come on, what are we doing here? It's followed with more of his spiral into madness. It's very effective, but it ran long for me. I think that's the point, though, so we really feel how long it is, Paul's, but this is a movie. You got to keep it moving. Like, you know, we don't, it's only an hour and 49 minutes, but this stretch in particular seems so much longer than that. It's like, you know, we don't need to feel like we've been on the fucking lighthouse rock for 2 months. So, I don't know. It was effective, but annoying. The eerie silence right before we hear, "Why'd you spill your beans, Tommy?" is very unnerving. I thought that was incredible. Loved how that was done. And it's followed up with some incredible gaslighting from Wake to tell Thomas that he was the one who smashed the lifeboat and then chased him with the axe. Or is it gaslighting? I'm starting to think I'm the one who's gone insane. Like, that's a great set of scenes because, like, I don't know. I don't know what's the truth there. But to be honest with you, I'm getting ready to wrap this movie up.
All right. And on that, we are wrapping this
show
up. Hey,
really quick, Brian. I know you guys have seen the clip, but every time Defoe's character farts, it sounds like Michael Irvin when he lets one rip in the studio. Anyway, back to you.
I haven't seen that clip, but I'm about to.
I think I read that all the farts in this movie were practical, too. Like,
oh, God damn it.
Yeah. So I don't think that it was really Defoe farting in these scenes, but that these were not digital farts. These were real farts.
Could you imagine you get a call? Hey, man, I need you to come in and do some work for me on this movie I'm doing. Sure, what do you need? I need you to fart into this fucking mic, man.
Mike, I think we have found your calling, man.
What I'm saying. Give me a call. I'll fart into your mic for fucking Dustin Franklin. Well, come on.
Don't ask me how I know this. Don't ask me no questions. There are girls who have pages on a certain site that sell videos of them poot scooting into the camera. That's all I'll say.
Buddy, the one girl was selling them in a jar. That's something. That's something.
Some people are sick.
Wow. Some people.
Not me. I don't subscribe to it.
All right, so somehow they get through that entire manic episode as Wake informs Thomas that they are, in fact, out of alcohol. No problem, because my guy is the MacGyver of alcohol and has apparently seen some shit. So he knows how to make a concoction of turpentine and honey. And whoever takes over for them at this lighthouse, if anyone finally does, is going to be fucking pissed about the condition of this joint. That night, giant waves are shown crashing against the shore, and the place is shown looking like Mike's college dorm room. The next morning, Howard finds Wake's logbook, and he's been criticized as drunken, incompetent, missing to abuse himself in the tool shed, and recommends he be sacked without pay. This sends Thomas over the fucking edge, and he annihilates Wake with a flurry of insults, letting him know he's tired of everything with him, especially those goddamn hot onion thoughts. The thoughts, I say. And instantly, Thomas hits the floor and begs to be let to see the lamp. To no prevail. Wake basically calls him a bitch boy and a filthy dog. And that is as say as that. Thomas hallucinates everyone from the real Winslow, a mermaid, Wake as some King Trident type fish figure before beating the ever living hell out of him and dragging him to the base of the lighthouse to bury him alive. Before losing consciousness, Wake describes a Promethean punishment that awaits those who look in the lantern, and Howard takes the keys up to the lantern room of lights. Howard gets a cigarette, and Wake pops up out of nowhere. Surprise, bitch! And strikes him with the axe. Batman then disarms the Green Goblin, murders him before ascending to the lighthouse steps. In the lantern room, Howard reaches into the lens and violently screams before falling down the steps. Sometime later, a barely alive Howard lies butt-ass naked on the rocks with a damaged eye as a flock of seagulls peck at his exposed organs. And so ends another fucked up A24 films. What do you think, Nico?
Hell yeah, man, brother. Sign me up.
Man said flock of seagulls, and he's ready to ran so far away from this movie. I know that.
I knew that shit was coming. Dude, they should have had Patton's hair and being like flock of seagulls for an Easter egg. That would have been fucking incredible.
All right, drinking turpentine. Holy shit, these guys are desperate. Wake sounded like me taking a shot of that as I did taking my first Rumplemint shot. Winslow pissing into the floating cup. I speak for all guys saying we do the same thing. We love a good competition while taking a piss. I love the line from Defoe. Ain't there no justice in this world? Simply looking for a light for a smoke pipe. Another example of a minor inconvenience seeming like the end of the world. Pattinson gets a shine here with this bit of dialogue. I love how he snaps on him for what Wake isn't, and you goddamned fots. You smell like piss, you smell like jism, like rotten dick, like curdled foreskin, like hot onions fucked a farmyard shithouse, and I'm sick of your smell, I'm sick of it, I'm sick of it. You goddamn drunk, you goddamn no-account drunken son of a bitch bastard liar. I'm going to use this insult against my enemies going forward, and for when these guys rate this movie low. Wake claps back with a simple monotone. You're relieved of your duties. More great dialogue between the two, and I really enjoy the fight sequence. Way better than what we got from that bullshit movie Halloween Ends. I love that Winslow keeps seeing these sea creatures as he's pummeling Wake with punches. Making a grown man bark is nasty work, but I got to compliment the foe. It's a good dog bark. Walking a man like a dog, too. Come on, Wake. You got to have some pride, brother. In an interview with fellow director Ryan Johnson, Eggers confirms that this was real dirt shoveled onto Defoe. This was shot on set, not a stage. Defoe was lying in freezing cold water while real dirt was thrown into his mouth, eyes, and nose. He knew what he signed up for, but Defoe wanted to give it his all. Dick almost got whacked as Wake attacks Winslow with the axe. Man is passionate about not letting Winslow into the lighthouse. Any other horror movie, I'd be mad we didn't see the axe to the head, but this movie isn't focused on that, so it didn't bother me. Winslow is still drinking turpentine, and upon a quick Google search, that will cause burning sensations, confusion, renal damage, and respiratory failure. So Buddy doesn't have much longer regardless. Jesus, I'm exhausted from that soliloquy, and I still got more notes to read. Goodness gracious. All right, Pattinson with more great acting as he sees into the light and begins laughing, screaming. Why is he doing that? Was it underwhelming, overwhelming? Was he seeing more sea creatures? Winslow saw the light. He's been baptized by the fire of its touch and the flame in its eyes. He's born to love again. He's a brand new man. Shout out to Brooks and Dunn. Great country group.
Yeah, brother.
Winslow missing an eye like the other seagull is a very nice touch as the film ends. Excuse me. I saw a comment online that compared the film to Greek mythology, which I did not know because I'm not very learned in that subject. But the comment said, the lighthouse is Mount Olympus. Defoe is Neptune. Pattinson is Prometheus. Prometheus steals fire from Mount Olympus to give to the humans. In Greek mythology, Prometheus is cursed to be eaten by birds for all eternity, just like the ending of the movie. Robert Pattinson, in an interview with Film 4 on YouTube, asked director Robert Eggers some pretty basic questions that I thought were interesting. Is this stuff actually happening? Is it a magical island? Whose perspective is the story being told from? Is this actually happening? Eggers replied, you have to decide for yourself. So even the actors don't know what the hell's going on. Great movie, great acting performances that makes you feel like you're in the 1890s. Fun fact, there were versions of the script that were too clear. Robert Eggers' goal was to make the audience go mad and become confused like Winslow. So the final script turned out being more confusing for the audience. And that's all I got, Mike. Go ahead, brother.
Well, great job, Mr. Eggers, because I don't know what the fuck is going on, pal.
Unbelievable.
First of all, this would be the end of the movie for me. Out of drink? Nah. Kill me. Take a rake, an axe, something. Just kill me right there. If I'm out of drink, I'm not staying any longer. And I'm not resorting to turpentine. Like, I'm not going to, like, I may huff it, you know, like Steve-O back in the day with his, you know, cans of whatever the fuck he was huffing. That's fine. But, like, I'm not doing the drinking. You can't make it. Listen, this light that started to go back and forth, the way they set everything up, I thought, man, the light was rocking. These two got a knocking. That's what, man, I just assumed because of how crazy this movie's been. But I was wrong with me, and I apologize. Pattinson going insane is absolutely fucking brilliant. It is an awesome performance, puts a new light on Pattinson as an actor, for me, in my opinion. And I know you both have told me I need to see the new Batman, and I will. I promise, okay?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For me, this was the first real step into him as this kind of actor, and I think he's fucking brilliant here, man. Look, like Nico mentioned, trying to aim at the pot that's moving to piss in it, fucking goals. I want that. I want that challenge. I want to be challenged in this way next time I have to tinkle. I want to do it. I'm going to figure out a way to do it next time it rains here. I mean, it should be an Olympic sport. That looks very challenging. Anyway, I am kind of glad that Winslow finally calls Thomas out here, or Thomas calls Thomas out, whatever the fuck. Wake, sure, whatever. Even they have the same name, which is even more fucking confusing now. I like that he calls him out here. He called, you know, and Nico went over the whole fucking thing, so I don't have to repeat him. But it was fucking brilliant, fucking hilariously written. Thought it was really, really well done and well delivered. And, you know, him basically responding back only that he's been relieved of his duties was a really nice touch. I thought that was funny stuff. You know, again, and all this back and forth with each other is just really awesome. It's Oscar-worthy acting performances. And I know what's going on is insane, but the performances themselves are Oscar-worthy, in my opinion. They got completely snubbed. I agree with you. And I just love the progression or regression of these two characters over the course of the film. You know, they started off as distant, then they became old sea buddies, almost kissing and dancing with each other, nearly killing each other multiple times, watching each other beat it. Like, there's so much stuff has happened in this hour and 50 something minutes that it's a roller coaster ride, man. It's great in that way, but it's also not great because I don't know what the fuck's going on. and then you get the scene where he's beating his ass and he turns into multiple different people, a mermaid, a fucking tentacle figure, just all kinds of shit. He's really losing it. And I think, you know, the effects and stuff were really pulled off great there. And just the paradigm shift from the whole film, my man Thomas has been the guy in charge. He's been the fucking top dog, for lack of a better term. And now he's a fucking dog for real, like treating him like a fucking dog. And again, maybe you guys can answer me. What the fuck is happening here? Why is he on all fours? Why is he on a leash? Why is he being buried in the sand? Like, what is happening?
You just said like 10 minutes ago, we don't need to kink shame. So.
Fair enough. No more questions. But it's a fucking nuts scene, man. It's nuts. I just wasn't expecting a kill here. He beat the fuck out of him, man. Holy shit. This man has perseverance, though. Took him two goddamn hours of this movie and however many days that were on this fucking island to finally get to that light. That's how you build a story. Take notes, Tony Khan. That's right. I know you listen to this show. Take notes. That's how you build a story. Only like three people will get that. Listen, he gets to the light and then falls? Question mark? No resolution. We have no idea what the light means. We have no idea why it mattered so much to him to get there. Why did he go crazy? Like, what is happening here? And then he falls at the end and gets pecked to death. Death by peck. Put it on a shirt like we already talked about. Just a really bananas final 30 minutes of this film. Fucking nuts. Like, I still am unsure if I like it, but I had a really good time talking about it with you guys. So, I mean, it probably will, you know, my score is kind of set, but I may bump it up another point here just because I had so much fun doing the episode.
Hearing the phrase, we're out of drink, in this situation would be the absolute worst thing that could happen. I would have already jumped off the top of the lighthouse, but I would have to do it here. I couldn't take it anymore. And then pissing and puking in the flooded floor is the definition of down bad. Like, I get what you're saying, Nico, trying to piss in that moving target. Yeah, absolutely, we would do that. But it's in the fucking floor. And then he crawls around on hands and knees. Like, no, dude, that holy shit, that's rough. And then you already said it, but I got to reiterate it, man. You smell like jism. You smell like rotten dick, like curdled foreskin, like hot onions, fuck the farmyard shit house. That is a roast. He flamed his old ass up. My God, that's the best part of the movie. It's the best part of the movie.
I agree.
The fight scene gets fucky, to say the least. Man was hallucinating all kinds of weird shit. The mermaid, he goes in for the kiss, then it's fucking sea monster. Like, what the shit is going on? Tom getting dog walked and then buried alive. Listen, I know he's old, but damn, at least go out with a fight. Fuck that. Be a man. A wild set of events unfold with him getting axed in the shoulder and then axing Tom in the face. And then he sees the light finally and goes even more insane and falls down the stairs, which was hilarious. Gets ripped apart by the seagulls. But that's it. Like, it's very anticlimactic to me. Like, I feel like I was on that rock with him, and by the end of this movie, I myself am insane. So, and I get, why did he have to see the light so bad? I think it was one of those, you know, you're told you can't do something. Well, why can't I not? And then you don't get an answer as to why. It's just don't do it. Your curiosity. So I think it became a drug to him at that point. But also, I think it just had to be there. Like, he had to see the light because, you know, the Prometheus subtext that he wanted to build in. The logs next to his body when the seagulls are eating at his guts. And then also, maybe I'm myself hallucinating, but it looked like his body, like his arms were moving. He was twitching a little bit as the seagulls were pecking at him. And so I could be wrong there. He may have been still. But if he was moving there, then that's even more to the Prometheus story because, you know, he gets his liver eaten for eternity. Like, I don't think he actually dies. And so I think that's just his hell, his punishment for the rest of eternity. But I don't know, man. Do I like the movie? I honestly couldn't tell you. It's pretty good, though.
Jesus Christ. This is what I have to deal with.
Hey, I'll drink that. Coke Zero.
God damn it.
No turpentine. All right.
It's wild to me that the actors didn't even know what the movie is about. That's fucking wild.
I saw that that Pattinson, when he took this movie, is like Robert Eggers sent him an email or something. It was like, hey, I got a movie for it. It's pretty weird. And Patton's reaction after reading it was like, yep, it is.
Well, he met with Eggers about being in a movie because he liked The Witch. But right. All of his other roles that he was offering him wasn't like he basically said that he didn't want to do like Twilight kind of stuff, commercial stuff. He wanted to do weird stuff. And like, I think the role he was offered was like an English, like sherry drinker, cigar smoking kind of guy. He's like, there's no challenge in that. I want to do something weird. So that's when he sent him The Lighthouse. And he's like, yeah, that's weird. I'll take it.
Definitely weird. Let's jump into social media. I got Twitter or X. Randy Smith. Randy Smith, go Dogs. I can give credit for the acting of Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe, but the movie itself isn't for me. Feel that. Sean the Glee Man. Thought it was an interesting movie. Of course you did. Haven't rewatched it yet, but it was definitely a heck of a performance on both actors. I get that too. Andrew Ferguson, while not as strange as Beau is Afraid. Yeah, it definitely is. Both of them are. This movie was as odd as tits on a turtle. Well, you have a way with words, Andrew Ferguson. That's all I had for Twitter.
Yeah, I got IG pulled up right here. We only got two. Macon X2 said, after watching The Lighthouse, I knew Robert Pattinson would make a great Batman. I liked the movie because of the atmosphere and visuals, but it left me lost in a good way. Is there beauty and ambiguity? That's got to be Brian's burner, right? That sounds like something you'd say.
Oh, I don't maybe think he'd be that nice.
Yeah, maybe Missy Hudson Wall is Brian's burner because her comment says questions ... WTF was this? With a laughing emoji. So.
Much better.
All right. Facebook, Abby Renee commented, probably one of the best what the hell did I just watch endings out there, but I loved it. While Dafoe has been known to encapsulate that crazy weird side, it truly showed Pattinson's acting chops, in my opinion. Great performances by both. I agree 100%. And like Mike mentioned earlier, Cousin Vinny, shout out to him. You're fond of me lobster, ain't you? Say it! Say it! And that's all
fuck
I got.
Fuck yeah. You're fond of me lobster.
Damn you!
Attaboy, Ben.
All right, you guys, Nico, Dustin, you have any fun facts?
The only half of my damn analysis was fun facts, but the only other one I didn't mention was former Robert Eggers film star Anya Taylor-Joy campaigned hard to be the mermaid, but he denied her.
Oh, man, ooh. Fuck you, Eggers.
Yeah.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
I got lightheaded. I almost passed out from laughing so hard.
Dustin, you have anything?
I got a few. Forgive me if these are repeats because I tried to delete them as Nico said them, but I had quite a few in here, so finding them was a challenge. So I'll just say them all, and Brian, if I repeat myself, just more work for you to cut out. Robert Pattinson's accent is based on a very specific area of Maine farming dialect. And Willem Dafoe's is the jargon of Atlantic fishermen and sailors of the time. Robert Eggers was very precise about the actor's accent and line delivery. He would say, for example, give instructions to, quote, say the second sentence of your third line 75% faster. So that is micromanaging. Okay, so when they shot at night, it requires so much more light to get exposure on the kind of film they use. They had to use 15 to 20 times more light than normal. And the crew put flickering 500 to 800 watt halogen bulbs in period correct kerosene lamps that were only a few feet away from the actors' faces. So Jesus. It was so bright and blinding on set that the actors could barely see each other. The story is very loosely based on a real life tragedy from 1801 called the Smalls Lighthouse Tragedy. There's two lighthouse keepers, both named Thomas, become trapped in a lighthouse station during a storm.
Oh.
Robert Pattinson had an unusual approach to psych himself up before emotional extreme scenes. Robert Eggers states, quote, sometimes he beat himself in the face so bad, or when it was raining through the cottage roof, Rob was drinking the rainwater in between takes. He also spun around in circles a lot. That was helpful for him. Or he'd stick his fingers down his throat to make himself gag, stuff like that, end quote. particular, the scene where both characters are drunk and Defoe lies on Pattinson's chest. He was, quote, sticking his fingers down his throat before his take. Willem gave me a look as if to say, if Rob fucking pukes on me. So, that was funny. The mermaid carving used by Robert Pattinson was auctioned by A24 to benefit the NYC Food Bank during the COVID pandemic in 2020. It sold for $110,750 to an anonymous buyer. Nico, you'll have to show it to me next time I'm in your house in Tallahassee.
Wait a minute. I think you're deflecting, Dustin. What's that on your shelf back there behind you, pal?
There's not a shelf behind me, first of all. Actually, if you're talking about
mermaid with some titties.
My Affluent Candle Company candle. It smells delicious. But anyway, in the original script, Thomas Wake had a glass eye, a peg leg, and three missing fingers. This was changed because Eggers felt the audience could misinterpret Wake as a pirate and that the effects were, and the effects required for his appearance would be too difficult under a tight budget. Okay, dipshit, let me talk to you. You want to say that it might be too confusing. They might think he's a pirate. We got to dumb it down for the audience. But then you want to make this movie not make any fucking sense? Oh, we're smart enough to figure out what the fuck you're trying to do with this movie, but we couldn't figure out that he's not a goddamn pirate. Let me gather. Last one I've got. At 39 minutes, when he turns on the sink and that sludge comes out, that is Hershey's chocolate syrup. And I actually had that in my notes originally, but I was like, I'm going to delete that. And then I found out it actually was Hershey's syrup.
Oh, nice.
Well, yeah, it was, pal. Why it looks so delicious or what comes out of my ass. Anyway.
Jesus Christ.
The production budget for this film, like you mentioned, Dustin, was tight. Pause. $4 million was the production budget, and it made a cool inflated adjusting here. $12,490,000 I can't even read that number. It made fucking $13 million, okay? It made $13 million. We're rounding up in this motherfucker.
All right.
Dude, that's crazy. That's a very small budget for this, but then you gotta think there's only really two actors in the whole movie. I guess, with the mermaid.
4.6 times its production budget. You're welcome.
All right.
But they built every building on set, though. I mean,
yeah.
The camera was like they used some old school stuff. They said it was expensive.
That jizz budget was out of control, I bet.
That shark labia budget had to be astronomical.
Freaking ridiculous.
Could you imagine being the effects guy that makes that? Hey, man, I need you to make fucking mermaid pussy. Anyway.
Oh, he had something cooking already. He actually volunteered. He's like, I have an idea for this movie, Robert. Let me talk to you.
All right. Let's jump into, we don't really have favorite kill, least favorite kill, but the rating.
I do.
Dustin, you want to go ahead and go first since you're finished your calculation?
Death by peck, baby.
Yeah, I've got a favorite kill. Wake. Because the blood splatter was a nice touch. Like, it was black and white. But just seeing that splatter come up was fucking awesome. Least favorite kill was Winslow, or whatever the fuck his name really was. Went out like a little bitch. You finally get to the top of the lighthouse. You see the thing that you've been wanting to see the whole time. And you fall down the fucking stairs. Go to hell. My final thoughts in the rating. So it's a visually appealing movie that was very well acted. But I can't really say I liked it. Kind of confusing about what was real and what was just his descent into madness. And it didn't really have a payoff. I get the metaphors and parallels with Prometheus, but it was still a bit of a mind fucked. Was Tommy ever on this rock, or was it just a hallucination? The logs next to his body at the end really make you wonder. I really am glad I watched it, but I'm good on ever watching it again.
Yeah.
I'll give it a 6.5. Is that fair, Brian? Is that too high, or is that fair?
You can do whatever you would like, sir.
Oh, shit. He's about to give out. He's about to hand out a real low rating. Oh, fuck.
It just doesn't.
I promise I'm going to be quick. My favorite kill is Death by Peck. My least favorite kill is Wake, because I didn't really want him to die. I ended up liking him by the end. Okay. Yes, I had the reverse of Dustin. I've kind of said everything I need to say. I think it's a movie everyone should watch once because it's fucking insane. And then maybe never watch it again. Great acting performances. Love the way it's shot. Checks off a lot of boxes like Dustin mentioned, but the soup is missing a really important ingredient, and that is fucking story and narrative that I just don't get. I can't wrap my mind around it. So because of that, I got to knock it down quite a bit. Had a great time recording the episodes. I'm going to bump it back up just a smidge, and I'm going to go with a flat 6.
All right. I'll go ahead, Nico, so you can end us on a good note. Again, not for me. You know, Defoe and Pattison put on a hell of a performance. I can't say that enough, but the movie kind of came across more of like a fucked up Black Mirror or like Twilight Zone. See what I did there, Twilight, Pattison? Hey. But Twilight Zone episode, and it didn't get better upon subsequent rewatches. Like, it's a one watcher for me. While that may be good for some people, that's just not a good thing to me personally. And I'm just not one that watches a movie and comes out like, what the fuck? And then rates it high. I mean, it's just not me. I gave it a 4 on the strength of acting performances. Can't go any higher. Sorry.
Higher than I thought you'd give.
Okay.
I honestly had no clue where it was going to be. favorite kill. Like Brian kind of mentioned, the movie's not really about the kills, but I'll go with Defoe's kill or death. I thought that was probably the best just because you do get to see a little blood splatter. Least favorite. Winslow, I guess.
The bird.
Yeah, the bird. The bird is my least favorite kill, by God. That bird didn't deserve it.
There we go.
I picked The Witch many moon ago. I thought it was great. These two fine gentlemen, these two actors, thought it was great. They actually hit Robert Eggers up himself because they thought he was a great filmmaker and they wanted to work with him. I think I made myself pretty clear that I really enjoy this movie. I really like it a lot. Like it, I like movies that, like I've mentioned in the past, it's like leave a weird feeling in me and they make me think and they stick with me. I enjoy those mindfuck kind of movies. Donnie Darko, like I have no idea what the fuck that movie's about at the end, but I loved it. I gave The Mermaid a 9.5 for her nipples. I'll give the movie a 9.5.
Oh, all right. All right. So that puts us at a composite score of 6.5. And IMDb has the movie at a 7.4, so we're pretty close.
All right.
Okay, this movie is... This movie
is Cloverfield.
Damn right.
I'm sorry. That was uncalled for. I was emotional. Yeah.
This movie is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, 90%.
They don't know.
Wow.
They know. Hey, and Nico, you mentioned that both actors wanted to work with Eggers. So I read that Willem Dafoe actually went to see The Witch kind of on a whim when it was in theaters and liked it so much that the next day he took his wife. And that's kind of how that relationship started. Like he started to get in contact with Robert Eggers after seeing The Witch in theaters. So. He does make some effective movies.
The Witch sucked us all in. I will agree.
Ayo.
Yes, she did. I should call.
All right, guys. I appreciate y'all reviewing this batshit crazy movie. This is one of the most fun episodes we've had in a long time. Holy shit.
Yeah, my boy
y'all
put up.
Y'all pray for Brian. Well, he's going to be heading his ass off.
I don't. Or not.
Yeah, or not.
Leave a lot of it in. Fuck it.
This was a fun review. Let's shout out our blood donors, and then Dustin can announce his pick for next week. Really appreciate our blood donors. I'll take a big burden off of us. Final girl donor, Anita Russell. Her film is going to be Pitch Black. We'll be doing that the week after next. Looking forward to it. Never seen it. Camper Level Reoccurring, Clayton J., Nina, Michelle Mirza, the Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Seligson, and Michael Evans. Camp Counselor Reoccurring, Edwin Hernandez Gunn, Joe Swinford, Shan, Adrian Aiello, Karen, Brian Samick, Andrew Ferguson, Matt Strickland, Brooke Maley, Thorne David Phillips, Heather Superduck, and Jennifer Davis from the Too Close to Home podcast. We really appreciate y'all's donations. It takes a big burden off us, helps us pay these bills. And I'm just going to tell my co-host now, if contradict me again, I'll duck your wages. All right, Dustin, go ahead. Now it's your pick for next week.
Can we make money from this?
Not yet.
Might just sounded like on We're the Millers. Wait, you guys are getting paid? But
facts.
So I said it on your birthday bonus episode, Nico. I love horror comedies. I do. They're so much fun. So I picked one for my pick next week. I went with 2013's Warm Bodies, which is a horror comedy zombie movie starring Nicholas Holt, who's great. Has John Malkovich in it, who's great. Rob Corddry, Dave Perry. So a great cast, really fun movie. Hope you guys enjoy it.
And I'll be doing scene by scene, so expect a lot of this.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Dustin, you're lucky that your pick is going after mine. Brian's probably going to give it like 6 extra points just because, God, I was way better than that shit last week. Oh, anywho, appreciate y'all listening. This was a hell of a review. This was a great time. I don't even know how to end this. Brian, just end it.
You're fond of me, Lobster.
Just want to remind everybody.